Please be aware that this podcast has reference to drug and alcohol use and paraphernalia and may not be appropriate for some people in early recovery. Everyone, my name is Dr. Majidin Islam.
And I am Dr. Kathleen Daniels.
And we want to thank you for listening to our Treat Addiction podcast. We know you enjoyed our food addict episode. And in this episode, we will talk of the treatment of this common and very interesting issue. The information in this particular podcast cannot replace you consulting your primary care physician and other specialists that are recommended by them. And just to start, we're just going to recap what we talked about a little bit in the previous episode.
Number one for me was that we wanted you to take away the fact, this is F-A-C-T, that food addiction is a real thing. It's a real thing, especially when we talk about the highly processed foods, foods such as pizza, ice cream, white bread, cookies, potato chips, I know some of you are salivating as we speak, but those are the kinds of food that trigger this type of response. What else did we talk about?
We talked about the dopamine issue, how it elevates, the highly processed foods elevate the dopamine.
Very similar to drugs of abuse, right?
Drugs of abuse, exactly.
And in the same areas of the brain. So you have this elevation of your mood, this feel good, and we talked about the comfort foods. It does make you feel better. So no hating here. It works. It's supposed to work.
Yeah, and this is not judgment zone at all. This is just an awareness situation.
Right. But after you get to this elevation, there is a crash, and then it reinforces the behavior. And then here's the side effect, weight gain.
Yeah, and we talked also about the glycemic index and being familiar with what that is, that there are particular foods, like Dr. Daniels mentioned, that will immediately spike the sugar and cause a massive insulin release. And that insulin release will make you feel very uncomfortable and make you want to crave for more. And then also deposit, because it's lipogenic, it deposits fat. So it really works in two ways, which are very damaging. And the sad part really is that our society has, instead of helping, it has greatly, greatly hurt, because regulatory oversight has just not happened, and food industry engineers, in search of bigger profits, design highly processed foods to surpass natural levels of reward and then target the vulnerable populations like children through aggressive marketing strategies. Because advertisements and all that are very, very successful. And they've actually followed the playbook of the tobacco industry with an apparent strategy to reduce the culpability of the rising rates of diet-related diseases by intense lobbying. Of course, that terrible word called lobbying. Mm-hmm. Yes. And funding favorable research studies. So they go even deep into science and they try to alter it to their benefit. But the recognition that highly processed foods are addictive provides not only new clinical tools, but also a clear rationale for proactive public health interventions, if only the government was interested.
If only. But they all are sleeping in the same bed. But you didn't hear me say that. You did not hear me say that. You know, because we talked about the combination, too, of the fats and the carbs in a certain combination is even more addicting, even more addicting. But I was just reminded as you were speaking, I don't know, a few years ago, they were talking about milk. It does your body good. Remember those commercials?
I do.
And in reality, milk is not good for your body, you know. But okay, I didn't say that. You didn't hear me say that in public. Because there are so many things that happen to us when we consume certain foods. The high processed and the infusion of the oils and the fats, it's definitely addicting. And we have been historically very poor with governmental protection of vulnerable populations.
Is that the same ad which says, big billboard which says, got a cookie? Is that this? Is it? Was it that? I don't remember. I remember this billboard.
But that sounds very familiar, though, because the cookie, the dunking of the cookie in the milk.
Imagine. Yeah.
And we're promoting it, and we're allowing
it. Yes, yes.
And we want someone to at least tell the public, this is not the best, but how can you say no when you're already allowing them to lobby and be given permission to do certain things? But okay, back to you.
There are ways in which there can be limiting environmental availability is increasing price through taxation. Well, that happens with cigarettes. It can be done with cigarettes. But it's kind of like with food, it's much, much harder to do because food is substance, you know, right. You know, you're kind of subsisting on it. And reducing the marketing to children, you know, all of this really talks about a cohesive, focused policy measures to address this public health burden of the epidemic of obesity. But I think we're very far away from that.
Very, very far. And unfortunately, individuals often do not take the necessary control for their health as they need to. And often we allow ourselves to be propelled into a method that is not working, is not good for us, because it tastes good to satisfy this current desire as opposed to what is best for you. That's true. And yes, clearly the government did not act in the best interest of the population, for it created these food deserts instead of grocery stores.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even know that was a thing until there was a big brouhaha.
And yeah, food deserts. I mean, it was actually completely deliberate. Mm-hmm. Because what is the difference between a carryout and a regular grocery store?
Yeah.
But they went with that. And in the carryout, of course, are more addictive substances.
More addictive substances.
Like cigarettes and alcohol.
And alcohol. And tons of sugars.
Tons of sugar.
And so, chips and rolls
of
chips.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's really... this food industry really needs to be reined in, and it's been extremely successful in designing and mass producing a huge variety of novel foods. People are not safeguarded from overeating in an environment with virtually limitless availability and a variety. Like every time you turn around, you know, I was listening to this podcast and they talked about bubbles or something. It's basically very, very immediately available alcohol.
Wow.
So we need structural prevention. We need policies that reduce the access of highly processed foods to a vulnerable population.
Especially the vulnerable. I think it seems like it's a fact that the food industry should be reined in. But there are those of us who are able to, you know, use insight and use self-discipline. But then there's a subgroup in the population that needs help, and the food industry should be held accountable to help towards that. Yes.
I think we should sort of focus now on the... So what is it that we can do? What is it that we recommend we do?
Well, I think there's unfortunately no singular recommendation for the treatment of food addiction. However, we know what some of the neurotransmitters that are involved. And so in the medical profession, we are trying to target those transmitters with medications like the serotonin reuptake inhibitors, the lorcaserin that seems to help, the Wellbutrin that seems to help. Vyvanse has been really effective for binge eating disorders.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
very effective. Anticonvulsants such as Topamax and Lamictal. But interestingly enough, the Topamax, it seems to interfere with the taste of some foods for some people. That's how I think some of them are benefited by it. And the combination medication, naltrexone and Wellbutrin, has been proven to be very therapeutic. So there are some medications that do help.
But because this is very much like in addiction medicine, we go with the behavioral part too.
Yes.
So we have cognitive behavioral therapy is very beneficial. Overeaters Anonymous is a 12-step program. And there are studies which show that Weight Watchers really, their program really does help.
Yes.
And I now understand why they have the fiber content in each item as well. Mm-hmm. So it has been repeatedly shown. And in most diets, the one thing that has been proven is that if the individual adheres to a particular diet, they are liable to be successful. It's right. just the problem is that people don't adhere to it.
Right.
And then we have the SCAA, or Sugar and Carb Addicts Anonymous, again, a 12-step program. We have FAA, Food Addicts Anonymous. And in some extreme cases, repetitive transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMS, can be helpful.
Yes. And, oh, and you know, I do have to give a shout out to Weight Watchers, because I've seen a number of individuals who responded to that approach. But for them, they were lifetime members. It was no longer a diet.
Right.
It was a way of life.
Yes.
You know, and in my opinion, I think prevention is one of the best approach to reining in this food addiction issue. And I think it can even begin as early as with the OB, teaching the mom how to eat healthy for the unborn child in attempting to curb that cycle. And then the pediatrician, when you see an overweight mom, to spend some time teaching them how to, eat and how to feed baby. Because the way the mother eats is the way they're going to feed the baby. And we need to make sure that they learn how to feed them healthy and what healthy eating is. And then we have the primary care doctors who are involved. And you know, you don't have a lot of time with that patient, but if they come in, they're morbidly overweight, you have to spend a couple of minutes to just say, hey, how's that diet coming? How's that eating coming? You know, and there's so many little things we can do along the way as clinicians to help begin the dialogue with these individuals.
Addressing it is a very important thing. And speaking of primary care doctors, of which I am one, my favorite is what I've done is adapted the South Beach diet to a one-page handout. And I call it the low-carb diet, and basically talks about avoiding white flour, white rice, potatoes, and sugars. And it talks about having 8 glasses or 2 liters of water a day and not eating late. And I had a friend actually in medical school who would lose. And then I like, how did you lose all this weight? And she would say, I stopped eating at 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that invariably works. And one of the reasons why it works is because basically your insulin shuts down mm-hmm. because you stop eating. And for a long period of time, so if she stopped eating at 6 and then she's going to eat again at 8 a.m., mm-hmm. that's 14 hours of no food. And so it really resets your body.
Yeah.
And that's also where intermittent fasting has
exactly.
come through.
Yes.
And people have lost a lot of weight. And one of the reasons that they do that is, and it's one of the very classic methods to cut the insulin cycle, mm-hmm. to prevent the spike of the sugar and to deal with the craving that the person feels. So people, you mentioned about medications, and I'm going to talk about a little bit about Ozempic too. Medications don't work. Mm-hmm. I tell patients that, okay,
yes.
we're going to be prescribing this medication. How are you going to work with the medication?
Because to maintain.
So mm-hmm. the medication is not going to work unless you have a diet that you are going to follow.
Yes.
So because in my experience, the low-carb diet has helped in very many ways, and it has caused weight loss. I combine the counseling. Mm-hmm. There has to be counseling.
There has
to be addressing it. You cannot see a patient in 10 minutes or
right.
5 minutes
right.
and just leave the room
right.
and give them a pill. It's
right.
not going to work at all.
Work.
So in terms of medications, one of the medications that I have used for addressing this has been metformin. And it's true, metformin is no Ozempic. Mm-hmm. But I have also, it has been kind of like a wake up sort of a situation I've had. They've been a little older, patients who've been on metformin and they lose. So at that point, I don't realize it. We suddenly see the patient coming in and they're losing weight successively. Every 3 months, every month, they're losing weight. And then they have to have a malignancy, a cancer workup.
Mm-hmm.
And the cancer workup is negative. And then it's really amazing how suddenly you're looking at the chart and boom, I look at the medication. I'm like, oh, the person is on metformin. So I take away the metformin and believe it or not, the weight goes up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, and you're absolutely correct, it's not one of those, it's no Ozempic.
It's no panacea either.
It's not going to cause rapid weight loss, mm-hmm. but over time, it's very effective in preventing the development of diabetes. So I'm a great fan of metformin. The other one that can be tried is, like we talked about, Wellbutrin. And because this food, highly processed foods engage the endogenous opioid mechanism mm-hmm. release of dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
So naltrexone has been effective. So Wellbutrin and naltrexone mm-hmm. have been combined and have caused weight loss. And then the elephant in the room, which I don't like at all, is Ozempic
mm-hmm.
because it has been used by celebrities. It has mm-hmm. caused a whole bunch of weight loss and transformations and a shortage of supply for people who really need it, mm-hmm. who are diabetics. I'm not a fan of Ozempic because Ozempic will cause weight loss, but if you do not treat the underlying behavior,
the weight
is going to come back. Like you said, the guy in the previous episode, he was on a keto diet, he got married, and then boom, gained 60 pounds
mm-hmm.
because the behavior has not been treated.
Not
so that, and what a low-carb diet really does is it's very easy to latch onto,
mm-hmm.
and if you avoid those foods, it can become a whole lifetime
mm-hmm.
of changing your attitude and your relationship towards food and then cutting the addiction.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in my office, I review the 8 laws of health with individuals that come in, and I talk about nutrition being a lifestyle. And I encourage people to not make it challenging. If you have different color vegetables, different color fruits, you're likely eating just fine. If you have some protein in there, it doesn't have to be meat. It could be legumes. It could be nuts and other grains. You're likely eating well. You don't have to make it complicated. Look at your plate. Have more fiber than not, more vegetables than anything else. Make it very simple. So eat healthy. The fruits are your friend. The vegetables are your friend. If you're not having them, you're doing something wrong. So eat healthy. Drink lots of water. It's amazing how many people do not drink enough water.
And I tell people, you know, it suppresses your appetite and mm-hmm. it gives you a lot of energy.
It gives you energy. And, you know, you've seen the studies that talk about a lack of water. You can feel fatigued. You can feel brain fog. There's dehydration.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a headache. You can be cranky. And you're thinking, oh, what's wrong? Go drink some water.
Right.
Drink some water. In fact, I tell folks in my office, you see, my water bottle is always
here. Yeah, I give that example, too.
It
I have a liter at work and a liter at home.
Yeah, it reminds me to drink water because sometimes I'll forget if I get busy. So drink lots of water. Get out and get fresh air and sunlight. Fresh air makes you feel better. Take some deep breaths. Makes you feel better. Get some sunlight. The sunlight not only helps you physically with the vitamin D and all that, we know about it already, but it also helps you sleep better.
For sure.
It helps you sleep better. It helps with the melatonin. And we have people who do not get outside very much. They do not exercise. I cannot process those who do not exercise. I would say to them, how can you live without exercising? You have to at least walk. At least walk. My addiction is to tennis. My friends know there's a tennis match, I'm going to be there. I feel so much better after I exercise. And the natural endorphins, you know, so I tell them, exercise. Get your sleep. Most people don't know that if you don't get to bed before midnight, you've lost your window of melatonin. Between 9 and 11, your body is making all this beautiful melatonin, and here you are watching TV till midnight, and you wonder why you can't sleep. There's one author that said, if you get 2 hours or 3 hours of sleep before midnight, it's more restorative than if you get 4, 5, or 6 after midnight.
Mm-hmm.
Get your sleep. Get your rest. Oh, one thing, this is so important. Temperance. We don't know temperance.
No, our society doesn't know temperance. It only knows immediate gratification.
We do not. We binge on everything,
including
Netflix.
Yes, yes.
Remember when the Biggie Cups started coming out in our community?
Yeah.
You know, things used to be medium and small. Now they're not just large, but biggie. We have to learn to just say, no, I have had enough. My stomach is this big. It's full. I need to stop eating.
And if you travel to the rest of the world, they don't have servings like we do. Our servings will feed a family
in
another country.
family.
One serving in a restaurant will feed a family.
Yeah. And they also, in this 8 laws of health, encourage to having a sense of a higher power. People do better if they have a sense of a higher power. They've done studies to show that those who were committed to some type of faith system, they did better in treatments.
Yes.
In the hospitals. They were discharged earlier. They recovered sooner. So basic things we need to do. But people, I tell you, even as they listen now to this podcast, they will go look for something more difficult to try. They're not going to do the simple things.
Yeah. And because it is very, very simple, but what we, because of immediate gratification, we want to reach for a pill.
Right.
We want it done like right now.
Right.
But what I want to do is possibly incur the ire of the Daniels.
Uh-oh.
By saying that I tell my patients that in terms of, because food addiction is so directly related to obesity,
mm-hmm.
that it's 80% food and 20% exercise. Because you have people who say, oh, I'll just exercise. I have not been exercising. You know, you can exercise on a regular basis, but if you are going to be addicted to highly processed foods, the weight is not going to go down.
You need to exercise and do the diet. I'm in agreement. So,
oh my God. Oh, I was so scared. I was like treading, like, should I? Should I not? Should I? Should I not?
I mean, I'd say 80-20, but definitely I think we need both. I think we need both. More,
right. Okay.
More fresh foods,
okay,
more
cool.
fruits, more vegetables. Go to Ciolino's, go to Manette's, go wherever you need to get your vegetables. Walmart, Kroger, Meijer, all of them. They have fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, stay in that aisle more than the
right.
processed foods aisle.
Right.
So we really hope you enjoyed this episode. And as we go through the various addictive substances, food addiction, and addictive behaviors, our next episode is going to be on gambling disorder, which I'm sure will get a lot of interest from our listeners. I'm your host and producer, Dr. Majubeen Islam.
And I am Dr. Ketley Daniels.
And our executive producer is the very talented Chris Pfeiffer. Please share this podcast with friends and family, for it is only through education and awareness that our society can be helped and we can stem the destruction that substance use, food addiction, gambling, and other social media addictions, which is going to come in future episodes, cause. Just go to wgte.org/treataddiction or wherever you stream your podcasts. And with all the challenges of life, do remember, patience in difficult times and gratitude always. See you soon.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.